The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 172, and this week we are discussing upcoming releases, The Boy Next Door, Strange Magic, and Mordecai. We have a spoiler-free review of Taken 3. That's the most recent one where Liam Neeson has a particular set of skills with a Z. From the Outside In topic this week, a listener-suggested topic on what makes for a good adaptation. Latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
Hey there, Aaron. How you doing today?
Doing all right. Justin McGumber.
What's up, Aaron?
And Brian Williams.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
You may notice I have a cold. If you never listened before, this is not my normal sexy voice. I actually have a cold, and these assholes decided to make fun of me.
I don't know about this.
Assholes?
Man.
I haven't said shit yet. That was just Brian.
Well, there's still no Scott too. So there's two of them. That's plural. Okay. Well, I hope my voice is probably better than it normally is, because normally you won't hear my annoying laugh pretty much this whole episode, because I think I might go and have an asthma fit if I tried.
No impressions this week?
I could probably do some really good ones right now.
Yeah?
No, I doubt it. Let's move on.
Name somebody with a deep voice. Let me try some Tommy Lee Jones or something. Hey.
Oh. James Earl Jones.
Oh, I can't.
Luke. Whoa! Luke turned into Rambo.
Like a Stallone, a Jedi now, or what?
Everybody.
Hey,
like
yo,
Stallone.
Luke.
Oh.
I'm your father.
Say hello to your mother for me. I can't even keep my actor straight. I am pretty doped up right now, so if I come off just off crazy left field, or I actually pronunciate people's names correctly, that's why.
Or pronounce.
Pronounce, whatever I do. See, I don't know. We did have a classic TV bonus episode just recently, so if you haven't heard it, it's a really good one with Marcus Beer. He's a game journalist that Scott loves to hump the leg of, and it was an interesting conversation. I recommend you checking it out. What's everybody else been up to? We heard about my nasty plague-induced week. Anybody done anything exciting in the last 7 days?
Not really. It's been too cold to do anything exciting. I know. My cold is nothing compared to your cold.
It's like 40 degrees different cold.
That's granted, but for Texas, it's just fucking cold. It's an overcast. I've barely wanted to leave the house.
As opposed to what?
Well, normally, I like to get out, maybe see a movie, take the dogs to the dog park. There's all sorts
of
shit.
Enjoy the weather. Go to the, you know, go to the theater.
Occasionally, you know, maybe get some wood and go out to my workshop and put something together. Oh, nice.
He's classy all the time.
It was so cold
just been
here.
Shit weather.
It was so cold here. They called
How
off.
How cold was it?
How cold was it?
3 days of school was called off because it was so cold. Just because it was cold, not because it was snowy. Because it was cold.
Would the children crack and break if they just walked outside?
They do.
There was a wind chill warning that said if your skin was exposed for 15 minutes, you would get frostbite.
Canada called and said shut
up. Well, that's where parents come into play, and you put clothes on your fucking kids before you send them outside.
You might be
then
surprised.
Then it's not exposed.
Wrap them up like Ralphie and
but then their arms,
story.
But then their arms don't go down.
This parenting tip brought to you by Brian Williams. Bundle up your fucking kids.
I had a kid come to school in a t-shirt. Not even making it up.
Like with no coat?
He had a coat, but he's just t-shirt.
Well, as long as he had a coat on, I mean, that's covering him up.
I don't know, man. That's not a whole lot of insulation. That's basically just putting a coat on.
I don't know what the rules are, man. I just don't know. Nobody knows my sorrow.
Hey.
Yeah?
Do some Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. You'll be all set.
Oh, I could do some Southern Spirituals.
Swing Low. Sweet chariot,
coming for to carry me home.
Me home.
Speaking of our singing stylings, you can nominate us for the Podcast Awards. I'm sorry, I'm starting to get back in the gist of things now.
All right.
The Podcast Award nominations are out. January 15th is when they became live. So if you go to the website, which is nmxlive.com, you can find the, and you can also go to the Hollywood Outsider. We've got it tagged. in the show notes. Look in your show notes. You can find the link as well. And go there and nominate us. And we want to win. We keep losing. We've been nominated, but we haven't won. So if you could go to nmxlive.com, find the 2015 Podcast Awards and nominate the Hollywood Outsider. We would appreciate it, and we'll high five you through the internet. How cool is that? Nobody.
It's cool and germ free.
It's true. Avatar has been delayed yet one more year. Does anybody care at this point? I mean, no. I know James Cameron says we're going to shit ourselves, but does anybody care at this point?
No, I'm no rush for a sequel. I was completely fine with the first one being it. So, I mean, I know it made it so much money, so it's bound to happen for a sequel, but I'm not, like, in a hurry.
Oh, James Cameron's not in a hurry. That's convenient.
Yeah. So, no worries.
All right. No, I mean, I was fine for, you know, excited for Space Pocahontas 2, but it just keeps getting, I mean, now we got to wait for the end. What is it? The end of 2017 for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know he does. He loads a lot of technology into his movies and everything, but man, this is just getting ridiculous. I really don't care. Even taking into account his last little comment a couple of months ago about shitting ourselves. I thought it was hilarious, and I got pumped for about a week, and then that was about it. So I really couldn't care about the franchise.
I enjoyed the first one quite a bit. Sure, the story had been used a million times, but there are a lot of movies that you could point at that and say the same thing. But I thought it was beautiful. I love the sci-fi setting, of course. And after hearing a lot of the ideas that he had for the next movies dealing with different environments and whatnot, I'm excited to see it. But my world doesn't revolve around it, so whether I see it next year, this year, 2 years, it really doesn't matter to me. I'm just looking forward to seeing it.
I'm convinced he's actually not making it. Like, he's just
could have not started by this time, but this point.
He's going to be dead before they even get started on this thing, man. He's already in his, what, 60s or something, isn't he?
He's practically dead, man.
Exactly. Jeez. He's almost there. Get on it if you're going to do it. Okay, well,
that's what she said.
Project, and you've made fun of Brian just a few minutes ago for going too low.
Swing low.
Fox won the rights for Escape from New York, the remake. And so we're going to be getting that soon. John Carpenter also gave his blessing. What I want to know is his blessing still a good thing, Scott?
I don't see why not. Is his blessing a good thing?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That's a fantastic thing. I mean,
I'm the only fan probably in the world that disagrees with that.
Well, this is like one of your, that character is like your idol.
It is, and I think John Carpenter's way past his prime. He also gave his blessing to the Fog remake, too. I just want to point that out before people, if you haven't seen it, it sucks.
I mean, you know, you made the point about he hasn't made anything meaningful since the year 2000, and even from the time that he started, you know, making good movies from the late 70s on up through somewhere in the 90s. I mean, you can still probably count them on what, two hands most? So
less.
Granted, yeah, I mean, definitely one. You might can justify two hands, but I don't know at this point, why is his name still synonymous with good? I don't know, with good stuff. I mean, the stuff that he's done good, he's done very good. And that's totally respectable. I give him all the props. But, man, this guy, I mean, he's done crap. And when does that start being taken into account? So I don't care that he gives his blessing on this. I hope he stays far away from it at this point.
I'd be curious to see it, but it depends on who they cast as Snake and who they get to direct. If they were able to snag someone with the talent of, like, the Russo brothers that did Winter Soldier, I would really be excited. And I know, Aaron, I think your top choice to play him now is Frank Grillo, which,
yep.
Who is your top choice, though?
No, that's right. No, I said you.
Okay.
Yep.
You know, if that's who they get, the only danger I could see is because he's not a top-tier name yet. I don't know if they would entrust this franchise to him, but you get the right people in front behind the camera, I think it'll be fine. I really don't. I at least like that John Carpenter is not going to be talking shit, you know, while this film is being made, constantly campaigning against it. giving his blessing. At least he's saying, yeah, I created the original. They're going to make new ones. I'm cool with that. And it lets new filmmakers come in without a dark cloud kind of hanging over their head.
Well, that's just it. He gave his blessing. He didn't.
I think, going to be like a co-executive producer.
I'm sure they'll give him some money.
Some credit.
He'll be an executive producer credit. Yeah.
Here's my thing on it. I've actually seen this movie because I think you actually tied me down and made me watch it probably a few years ago. And
great glider effects.
This is one of those movies that I love the premise of this movie. The idea of the president crash landing the Air Force One in the middle of New York,
that's
a prison, and him having to get him out, and his character. Love that idea, but for someone that didn't grow up with the film like you did, I don't love it. You know what I mean? I like the idea.
No, I got it. It doesn't hold well either.
So it's really hard to watch. So the idea of this getting redone by today's standards with maybe some tweaks to make it more modernized, and as long as they keep that attitude from the original in it, I'm all about it. I can't wait to. I love the idea, but I get the impression you just hold the original so dear that you don't.
It's not like I think the movie's infallible, because I know if you go and watch it now, it doesn't hold up. It's 1981 or two, whenever it was, but it's old.
Well, at least he's not surfing in this one, right? That's in the second one.
Oh,
right?
Don't bring that up. Yeah. let's leave the sequel out of this. The first one is just, it's a really great melodramatic thriller. And, you know, it's not an action movie. I think people always call it it's really not an action movie. There's only minimal action in it. It's just, it's the character. Mm-hmm. And the character has always been that one. It's kind of like Riddick. Riddick has always been that character that is too cool for the movies he's in. He needs a director with some talent to actually elevate it to the next level. Mm-hmm. And that's where Snake is. He was always a great character with a great actor, unfortunately the wrong director. And I know some people will hate me for saying that, but go watch Escape from LA if you doubt me. He's the wrong director. He gave him $50 million and it still looked like it was made for sci-fi. It's am I wrong? I mean, it's just bad.
It's terrible.
And it was inexcusable.
For sci-fi of that time.
$50 million then could have made Dawn of the Planet of the Apes now. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that was a lot of money, and he just... Oh, I don't even want to get into that.
It's all spent on water tank effects.
It was. I do like Grillo. Some people have suggested Walton Goggins. I kind of like that. That'd be an interesting take.
That's not a bad take. I never would have thought of that.
I wouldn't have either, actually.
Somebody in the Facebook group suggested that. I'm like, wow, that's a really interesting pick.
It's really hard to get that Venus out of my head, though, whenever I see him now. Even if I see him unjustified, that's all I see.
I think that's all you want to see, Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to see the guy dressed like a woman.
Yeah, that sounds like some mommy issues there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. You want to talk about it? We got time.
It started at my childhood.
Let's move on to Gone Girl. Some real lady issues. Gone Girl's David Fincher, Ben Affleck, and the writer Gillian Flynn are re-teaming to remake Hitchcock's classic Strangers on a Train. I want to know, Brian, do you think we'll finally get a solid Alfred Hitchcock remake? And I don't mean the remake where he remade his own movies. I mean like a remake of someone else remakes his movies.
I mean, hey, the potential's there. History is not on their side, but it's one of those things where there's some pretty good, pretty good clout there that can definitely probably pull this off just about as well as any, potentially as anybody else. So I'm curious. I'm not jonesing for it, but I'm curious to see how they do.
And for those that have possibly not seen it, Strangers on a Train is basically a guy meets another guy and he tells him that he will kill his problem if the guy also kills his problem. So it's basically crisscross is the theme of the movie. You kill my problem
jump,
in life.
Jump.
That's going to be the soundtrack.
Oh, that's what Hollywood would do. That's what they would do.
Crisscross would make you want to jump.
Ben Affleck make you want to jump.
So wasn't maybe Throw Mama from the Train?
Yes, it was kind of a comedic remake of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The thing that people keep saying is, well, because I've talked to a lot of people that know I'm a huge Hitchcock fan, and they say, well, you just don't realize that quality filmmakers involved, this will be different. Gus Van Sant was a quality filmmaker, and he took Psycho and just made it. He actually did a shot-for-shot remake and made it bad, if that was possible.
Well, but I think that was part of why it was so bad. He didn't bring his own creativity to it. I don't know what he was thinking in wanting to do a shot-for-shot remake of a movie. Just watch the fucking original. If that's all you're going to do is just put slap new faces but the exact same shots, what's the point? So to me, that film shouldn't even come up in this kind of a conversation. Hopefully someone of David Fincher's ability, as well as Ben Affleck and Gillian Flynn, whatever. These are three people of immense talent, and hopefully together they can do what Gus Van Sant could never have dreamed to accomplish.
Larry, let me ask you this, because you said, can we finally get a solid Hitchcock remake? Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of drawing a blank, but are we not counting Disturbia as a remake of Rear Window?
It's not really a remake. It's more of a takeoff of the premise.
Okay,
of,
then what?
An homage or something?
Yeah, an homage.
What ones am I missing that were done besides Psycho?
There's actually been several. A lot of them have been TV remakes. There's been Rear Window, Dial In for Murder. And there's been others throughout the years. There's just been nothing that really captured anybody's attention artistically, because it was all like half-assed retreads.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot.
And you would think in this day of special effects that they might be able to pull off The Birds.
I think they've talked about that remake in The Birds several times. I think people are leery of that one.
I think people are more scared of bird flu than they are birds.
Maybe the birds could cough as they're flying in at you.
What does a bird sound like when it coughs?
How does it sound?
Turn your head, Tweety.
Let's move on to something that I know nothing about. I mean, I saw this movie once, but it was a long time ago. Justin, I know you know this franchise, but we actually waited to talk about this because a lot of people had ran several stories about Scarlett Johansson being cast in The Ghost in the Shell. Well, we didn't really have any other details. Now we do. Rupert Sanders is going to direct it. It's going to hit theaters April 14th, 2017. And it's basically an anime classic. Why is this considered one of the elite anime films?
Well, because it's so goddamn good. It was so well done. Now, Ghost in the Shell is about this Major Motoko Kusanagi who had, because of an early childhood accident, had her body, her brain put into a synthetic body, which in this future they can do. Almost everybody who is alive in this time has got some kind of modification, whether it's just simply a jack that you can port into networks and so forth, up to and including a full body replacement with your brain put in, which is what she has, which gives her a lot of abilities that normal people don't, an ability to connect to networks. It also makes her stronger and faster. And she's part of a group called Public Security Section 9 that deals with counter cyber terrorism. So there's a lot that goes into this story. I think when The Matrix originally came out, Ghost in the Shell was one of the things that a lot of people compared it to, because there are some similarities between them in the cyberpunk nature, jacking in the network, so on and so forth. And The Matrix just had an anime look to it. But it's celebrated. The franchise has been around for, I think it originally came out, the manga came out in 1989. So we're talking 25 years that this has existed.
It's been out a long time, yeah.
Yeah, several movies, a television series that I watched the first season of. I forget what it was called, Ghost of the Shell, Solid State something. I don't remember what it is now, but it's very popular in Japan. It's popular with anime fans over here. Hopefully Rupert will, Sanders will be able to do a good job with it. The only real thing of note that he's directed so far was Snow White and the Huntsman, which I did like. This is a very different story and type of story, so I don't know how well his skills will translate to science fiction, but you know, I'm sure he'll be surrounded by people who are just as who are able to guide him down the sci-fi path.
Hopefully he doesn't make out with Scarlett Johansson.
Well, considering that seemed to be a problem. She's married, hopefully she'll be a bit more immune to his charms than poor Miss Kristen Stewart was. But I can't wait to see this. I would not have picked Scarlett to play her. There are a lot of other actresses that I would have looked at first. But she's got that, you know, that big name appeal. So hopefully she'll do a good job. But I love Ghost in the Shell. If you haven't seen it, check out the animated movies. Even now, decades after they were made, they're still really good.
I have not seen it myself, but I've always been kind of interested in – I've dabbled in anime a little bit, just a couple series here and there and a couple
of movies. It's like heroin for you?
Yeah.
I just tried it just on the weekends, just a little bit.
I did a little research going into this when we talked about this. And Justin covered most of my points on what it is. What I found interesting is that Ghost in the Shell, the Japanese words for it, literally translates to mobile armored riot police, which I thought was kind
really?
Of interesting.
Really? Didn't I know that?
And I actually talked to one of our listeners about this. That's a big anime freak, Brad Pimpek.
Okay.
You guys know him probably mm-hmm. from the forum. He said that he saw the movie a long time ago, hasn't seen a whole lot of the series. But from what he does know about it, he said that the premise focuses a lot on technology becoming so all-consuming and taking over our lives that eventually becomes more of a threat than actual help. So to me, and when in this conversation, I told him, I said, well, that kind of sounds like a precursor to Terminator, you know, like mm-hmm. being afraid of that. And he said that was, and he mentioned The Matrix as well, but he also said the theme kind of includes is that using that threat that you're fighting against to actually fight back as well, you know, using that technology to fight against technology. So
makes sense.
My whole take on this is I honestly believe, I know you guys have your comic book movies now, right? You grew up reading comic books, and you're finally getting to see that come to fruition with mm-hmm. comic book movies being like the big thing right now. I mm-hmm. truly have faith that in the next 20 years, anime stories and video game adaptations are going to become a big thing. I sincerely believe that you know, those children of the 80s are having
you found
a
way to just make this video games, didn't you?
No, that's not. I'm being.
It was like 5 minutes just to get you to video games. I saw what you did. It didn't slide past.
There's a difference between believing and wishing, Scott.
No, I totally agree with you. But I sincerely believe that it's going to get there. That, you know, when I'm in my 40s, I'm going to be able to say, hey, finally, the stories that I grew up with that I loved, whether it be the video games or whether it be this anime.
The effects are getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's a possibility.
I really think.
Hey, kid, you ain't far from it. So
I know.
They better
know.
Hurry up.
That's true. Youngin'. I do think they're going to get a little flack because of, you know, a Japanese woman being recast as Scarlett Johansson. I think that's going to be interesting. Just in Japan, I think it'll cause some flack, but
it's not like it's a Chinese woman playing it. That would have caused stirred up a lot more there.
Right. Like Memoirs of a Geisha?
Exactly.
Oh, and just to correct myself, the TV show is called Standalone Complex.
Oh, we're a big fan of
you. So for those who were like, oh, he said that wrong, and they're about to type an email, don't bother.
It's already been sent, I imagine.
Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex.
That's true.
And the first season I did quite enjoy. I need to get back to that.
Right now? We'll
yeah,
wait.
Right now.
We'll
later.
Moving on, Adam McKay. Now, he's known for directing Will Ferrell. Not exactly who you would think of for a top-notch drama. But he's gearing up for this financial drama. And, Scott, tell him who's going to be in this movie.
We got Brad Pitt. So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Bale.
Method actor Christian Bale.
Ryan Gosling. Brian's favorite.
It's a whole lot of sex.
That's a lot of hotness.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hot. And that's only the beginning. Apparently, this is supposed to be an ensemble cast with all big-name actors, like a Traffic or a, what's that one you hate, The Counselor?
Is it? Yes, I hate The Counselor.
But that style of movie where it's a lot of actors, a lot of popular actors in it, this could just be the beginning. It's also important to note that this is Brad Pitt's production company,
mm-hmm.
Plan B. They did Moneyball.
12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave and Selma, which did you wind up seeing?
I didn't end up seeing it, but I am going to.
Okay.
Did they do World War Z as well?
I believe so.
I'm assuming any movie he's in, his production company.
No, Fury wasn't. Plan B, was it?
No, Fury wasn't. No, Fury wasn't.
Okay.
I think this whole premise is really interesting, though. This tells the story of the buildup of the housing and credit bubble during the 2000s that led to the financial crisis, or what everyone called the, you know,
the new recession, really.
Exactly, from 2007 to 2010. I love this
idea. The reason Justin lost his job originally? Gotcha.
Aww.
Hey, so did I. But to me, I mentioned Traffic a second ago, and From what I read, this sounds like it's going to be that kind of a movie where it kind of sheds light on something that a lot of people don't know a lot about.
Is it going to have multiple stories that converge upon each other?
Right. Well, I from what I gathered, it's even more so on that. Like, what Traffic did to me, you know, with drugs is the reason
they were bad.
Yeah, drugs are bad. Okay.
Okay.
No, the reason that movie hit me so hard is because I think it portrayed the reality of what drugs are and what they do, and how it can affect real lives in understandable ways. You know, from an outsider that's never been involved in that whatsoever, it's just you just know drugs are bad, okay, and you stay away, and that's it. You don't understand how it goes into it. And I hope that's what this movie does, is it really sheds some light onto that.
You do that okay pretty good.
Yeah, you like that? Yeah. I actually was an investment banker before I became a teacher, so I dealt with this kind of stuff when it was going on, and like Justin said, I also lost my job because of that. But I hope it tackles that issue honestly. Because I can't tell you how frustrating it was when that recession was going on, hearing people blaming, oh, well, man, this economy, it just really sucks. And that's why basically people were using the economy as an excuse for their bad personal financial decisions. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping
Still do.
And I hope that this kind of teaches people in a interesting or entertaining way what actually happened and what was going on.
So if I work at McDonald's, And I'm approved for $200,000. You're saying that's not a good idea?
Not a good idea.
Okay.
Not unless you're making $15 an hour.
Don't go there, Scott. There's no reason. I think it's good that Adam McKay is venturing away from just Will Ferrell movies. Mm-hmm. I think I would be not surprised if Will Ferrell popped up and is like, hey, and does a little cameo. But I'm
like a serious cameo?
A serious cameo. Even though it's really hard to take him seriously at this point. I would be shocked if he did not, because those guys are really good friends.
Hmm. But are you expecting a Will Ferrell-esque movie, or are you expecting a Traffic-like movie?
No, I expect a drama. I mean, he says it's going to be a serious drama. He's okay. Trying to expand his horizons and do something different.
Hmm. And let's face it. I mean, Christian Bale and Ryan Gosling are not exactly known for their comedic chops. So, not to say they can't be funny. I'm sure they can, but... Yeah, to do
it. We've never seen them do it yet.
Yeah, exactly. They've been around long enough, and I just don't see a Will Ferrell style comedy happening with
this. Would you go see it, Brian? Because you're not a big Gosling fan.
What are you talking about? Drive was his favorite film.
I'm not a Drive fan.
Okay.
And I'm not that other shit movie he did to follow up Drive that was even worse.
Beyond the Pines. But,
Beyond the Pines was good.
Fighting in Bangkok or something. I don't know, but.
Fighting in Bangkok. Only God forgives. Only God forgives. That one?
Okay. Yeah, whatever. Okay. I don't know. It was horrible. I tried to bleach that one out of my memory. I just, ugh. Anyway.
There's some things vodkas can't scrub out, man.
That's right. So, no, it's one of those things where the subject matter draws no interest to me at all. It's one of those things where I go to the movies to escape reality. And this one just kind of brings back bad memories. So
I
basically know what happened with the economy. I don't need 2 hours of it telling me, but you throw in Brad Pitt, Christian Bale, and even Gosling, and you know they're going to bring in some pretty good caliber supporting actors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sign me up. I'll sit through it. I don't care. They got my $10 already.
Justin, do you want to see this? I mean, I know you said because of, you know, it cost you your job, but do you want to see it?
I would pretty much just echo everything Brian just said.
Don't want to relive it?
It's not a topic I'm all that interested in, but damn, when you put that kind of caliber of actor in front of the camera, you're kind of compelled to watch anyway.
It's almost required by law.
It is. At this point. I think you can actually go to jail if you do not see this movie.
Remember, you can watch normally any trailers that new trailers that come up. You can watch on the website at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can tweet us at @_outsider, like us on facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider, or email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Remember, nominate The Hollywood Outsider at the Podcast Awards, nmxlive.com.
All right, folks, we've got three films coming out January 23rd. The first one up, The Boy Next Door. This one stars Jennifer Lopez, Ryan Guzman, and Kristen Chenoweth, who... I've been really trying. Oh, yeah.
I think it's important. Go ahead.
That's right. That's right. Now, this is directed by Rob Cohen, who I believe did a little film called Fast and the Furious a little while ago. And it's about shortly after her divorce, a woman falls for a younger man. Please let it be me. Please let it be me. Who just moved in across the street, though their torrid affair takes an obsessive, dangerous turn. Aaron, you got the music flowing over there. You must be feeling a little bit groovy. Is The Boy Next Door something you're interested in checking out?
Hell yes, I want to see it. I think it's absolutely ludicrous, but I should probably turn this off for the copyright laws. I want to see it. I don't know why. I just think it looks like a fun, ridiculous thriller. And who, if you were a teenage boy, who wouldn't want to sleep with Jennifer Lopez?
She looks, still looks good.
Yeah. As Brian would say, only.
Let's not have that word anymore.
But tell me,
hey,
I'm wrong.
Don't drag me down. There's no physical evidence that I ever said that word.
That you know.
I'm just
of.
Letting you know from now on. The next time you guys say something like that and you say cut it, I'm not cutting it. So you're gonna have to live with it.
All right.
Yes, I definitely want to see it because of Jennifer Lopez. That's really all it is. And the guy from Fast and the Furious is doing it. Is that meaning like it's gonna the sex scene's gonna be really short? I don't know.
No, I don't know. You remember the length of that drive, that runway?
He didn't do that one. He didn't do that one. I definitely want to see
Triple X as well.
There you go. He likes him. He likes him to look sexy. I like these. I like these movies. I like them. Are dumb, dumb, dumb guilty pleasure. That's what this looks like.
It really does. And we talked about this trailer when it first popped up, and I'm going to say the same thing I said then, is that stop it.
Sorry.
This looks to have some
cold medicine.
This looks to have some potential, but it doesn't look like any new concept, really. I mean, and it, the concept.
How many movies have new concepts, really?
I know, but I don't know. The concept really creeps me out a little bit, too, so. This is one of those that feels like it's a good trailer, and that's going to be about it. I want it to be good, but it looks like it's going to be a good trailer because some of those lines are really cheesy. That they come across okay in a trailer, but in a full blown movie, is that going to work?
Let me ask Justin and Brian a question. Either one of you, whoever thinks they're the most mature, answer this. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know.
We're limboing right now to see who can be more lower.
If you flip the script on this and it's a man, a middle-aged man, and it's a teenage girl.
It's a rape movie instantly.
I'm serious question. Is it going to be taken as the same as it would be the way it is currently?
Well, there was that movie in the 90s with Alicia Silverstone, The Crush. That dabbled in that. I mean, we've seen Lolita. So, you know, my knee-jerk reaction is to say it would not be taken in the same vein. It would be a rape movie or a pedophile, predator type situation. Not a, oh, well, geez, you know, he's hunky and all right. Well, okay, I made a mistake, and that's it. You know, now I got it. So it's, but that's the world we live in. We live in double standards. That's just, you just got to take it. Sorry, you know. I mean, it's unfortunately it that's just how it is.
And yeah, you know, I hate to do it, but I got to agree with Brian. It is. It's a complete double standard when a male teacher has an affair with a female student. It's just the most terrible thing that ever happened. In the media, when a female teacher does the same, they act as though it's the same. But to the rest of the populace, it is not the same.
They're secretly high-fiving
those
bullies.
Every guy makes the joke about, yeah, nice.
I do. I know I do. Yep.
I mean, there was that one 42-year-old blonde teacher, relatively good-looking, had a, you know, from all accounts, a pretty torrid love affair with a student. And what was it I read on the Facebook? Somebody was said he probably had to go to the hospital because his hand wore out from all the high fives. You know, so yes, in our culture, a older man and a younger woman is terrible, but an older woman and a younger man isn't really seen in that way at all. Is that appropriate? I'm not gonna say. I think that there are some women out there who are predatory, but I know that, as you know, when I was a guy at 16, 15, 17, if it sat still long enough, I was probably humping on it. And most other guys I know were the exact same way. I mean, that is all your brain thinks about when you're at that age because of your hormones. I mean, you just want to hump everything in sight.
Long enough.
Just stand still.
When I think romance, I think Justin McCumber. That's what I think.
That poor beanbag chair never saw it coming.
Didn't see it coming. But to get back to the movie.
Oh, there's a movie?
Yeah, to the movie The Boy Next Door. My concern is with J-Lo because other than, of course, her iconic performance in Ice Age Pedophile Drift, the only movie she's done that I think that's worth anything there's two actually. The Cell, but purely because from a visual standpoint, it was stunning. But performance-wise, Out of Sight. And that movie was made in 1998.
Yeah, she hasn't done a whole lot.
Superb in that. Since then, it has just been shit acting all the way through. Can she return to some of the Out of Sight? I don't know, but I'm not thinking this is a material that's going to get an Academy Award performance from her. But who knows? Okay. Who knows?
Let's move on. I think we've obsessed over this long enough.
All right, next one up, Mordecai. Now, this is a film directed by David Cope, stars Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Ewan McGregor. Art dealer Charles Mordecai searches for a stolen painting that's reportedly linked to a lost bank account filled with Nazi gold. Brian, this movie, when it originally, the trailer came out, I could not have been less interested in it. It looked really kind of rather dull and derivative. But since then, my opinion has changed quite a bit on this one. What's your opinion on this? Do you want to see Johnny Depp in yet another kind of character to performance?
Not at all. Like you, with the first time I saw the trailer, it just almost sickened me to watch it. It just was just appalling. I had no interest in this kind of Mr. Beanish looking character that he's being, this kind of hapless person who stumbles into, you know, solving mysteries or whatever it is that he's doing. Again, while all wearing yet another costume, and the silliness of it just didn't appeal to me. I'm all about silly movies and everything, but for whatever reason, it just didn't grab me. The latest trailer I've seen pretty much solidified that feeling, and I can pretty much guarantee you this one won't be getting any money out of my pocket.
Do you guys get the impression watching this trailer that the studios or the executives were like, hey, we need a role for Johnny Depp. Got any ideas? Came out?
Something like that. I'm getting sick of his dress up, man. It's getting old.
But I will.
You think they have like a Johnny Depp Mr. Potato Head face? And then they just reach for all the different accessories and like, okay, try a pointy mustache. Oh, that. That'll work. Now let's try some different hats. And
yeah, I picture him actually. That's how they come up with it. Like, you're going to solve mysteries. And he's like, oh, I can't do it as me because I look too normal. Well, here, go into wardrobe and just come out however crazy
you want
to. I think so. I think he loves doing this stuff.
Look too normal?
I think he's got some self-esteem issues. And he looks in the mirror like a depressed man. He's like, oh, I'm so ugly. I got to cover this up. Yeah. I'm telling you, the guy, he insists on, I think he has a hard time with realistic acting.
I got to say, though, I kind of agree with Justin that I felt very cold to the first trailer I saw on this and this new one. I think it looks really funny. It's grown on me a little bit. Maybe it was the second viewing. Maybe it was the new stuff in the trailer. I kind of want.
Maybe you were drunk.
No, I wasn't. I was working.
That doesn't mean anything.
Again, yeah. Maybe you were drunk.
No. I want to hate it, but this was really funny to me. I kind of want to see it now.
I don't want to hate it. I just don't.
No, it's not that I want to hate the movie. It's that, like you were talking about, I'm kind of tired of seeing him all gizzied up all the time.
See, I'm not even kind of tired. I am tired of it.
Right.
It's
every time I look at the title, I just keep wanting to say Mordecai. Okay. Something about that T in there just throws me off to where I feel like it's got to almost break it up into two words. I don't know.
Well, you don't have a problem with Django Unchained, but Mordecai gives you a problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
The D.
The D is silent.
The D is silent.
We all know that. He tells you in the movie, the D is silent.
You haven't seen the movie yet. Maybe.
It was pretty well established that D was silent.
Maybe in the movie he says the T is silent.
Well, that's dumb.
You'll have to let me know then whenever you go see it.
All right, we'll do.
All right, next we've got Strange Magic. Now, this one is an animated film that they say George Lucas was the creator of the story on this. I don't know if that's going to draw you in or push you away, but it stars the vocal talents of Evelyn Rachel Wood, Elijah Kelly, and again, Kristen Chenoweth. So she's obviously having a...
Is she in everything?
She's basically, yeah, she's supposed to be popping up in all of it, as well as Alfred Molina. Now, this is inspired by A Midsummer Night's Dream, and it centers around a goblin, elf, fairy, and imp characters with their misadventures sparked by the battle over a powerful potion. You know, Brian, I don't think you're the biggest fan of CG animated films. Maybe you'll correct me on that. But this one looks... I gotta say, this one looks like shit.
Does it? I haven't even seen the trailer.
I've seen the trailer a couple of times, and it for me it gets worse with every viewing. It looks like they threw everything they had into the pot and just started stirring, hoping it would make a beautiful stew, and instead it just kind of looks like dog vomit. Brian, have you seen any trailers? Are you at all interested in Strange Magic?
I don't know. For some reason, I just keep thinking like Fern Gully or something like that, and not in a good way. I'm really kind of in your boat with this. There's some good talent, good, you know, voice talent. I'm a big fan of Kristen Chenoweth's. I don't know. It's really more of a crush. Let's just be honest. But anyway, but it's just, it, God, this just doesn't look bad at all, or look good. It's just like,
make up your mind. Like, good, bad. What is it?
It just doesn't, I hate it. It just doesn't look bad at all. But
you know what it reminds me of? That movie that came out either last year or the year before called Epic that we all crapped on. It looks like that with a better budget and a pop music soundtrack.
I didn't even know it was being made until like a few weeks ago.
Oh, really?
So as far as I'm concerned, that's my first song.
I don't know. When you think George Lucas, do you think comedy or musical?
You don't want me to answer that because there's a lot of fans here. Recently, like 2000s or like before that?
I mean, granted, George Lucas created the story of Willow, which is a whimsical fairy tale. But at least that had seemingly went through the trailers. You thought, well, that movie looks like it's got a story. It's cohesive. There's something going on here. But every time I see the trailer for this movie, it looks like there's really nothing central to it. There's no cohesiveness. I can't tell what this movie is really about because it's nothing but some gags, some songs, and some pretty CGI as fairies flitter through the air. I don't get a sense that there's actually a story here. And the trailers, if there is one, they're not telling me what that story is.
Yeah. It does look gorgeous, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks really pretty, but fucks, you know. I think a two-year-old on an iPad can make something pretty these days. It's, you know, we can get pretty from Pixar. You also know what we get from Pixar? We get fucking stories. Mm-hmm. And we get trailers that look like they have a story, and they let you know basically what it is. This looks like shit, and I have zero interest in it.
Ditto. There you go. That's my deep thoughts on it. Ditto.
Anybody else got some deep thoughts before we move on?
By Jack Handy.
I ditto his ditto.
All right, yeah. ditto. All right, of these three films coming out, January 23rd, The Boy Next Door, Mordecai, and Strange Magic. Woo, man, talk about just a handful of delights. Which one are you guys going to run out first to see? I know you'll see all three, but which one are you going to see first? Brian?
Shit, I got to pick first. Boy Next Door looks like Netflix. Absolutely don't. Just by default, I'm going to go with Strange Magic.
Really?
At least it's pretty pictures, and you know, Kristen Chenoweth even is in it. Even though I can't really look at her, at least I can look at her in The Boy Next Door. Maybe that's the her and J Lo. All right, Boy Next Door. All right.
You've got an interesting way to work
that
out.
You got the T and you got the A. Scotty.
I got to go with Mordecai.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Aaron?
I'm going with The Boy Next Door because I'm naughty. And I want to see J-Lo be naughty. I'm perfectly okay with teachers banging students. Except in Scott's class.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Mordecai, too. So it's split 50-50 between The Boy Next Door and Mordecai. Strange Magic, I think we're all just taking a big dump on it.
Well, Brian, I think, would kind of see it, I guess. He sounded really enthusiastic about it, but...
Justin, we need a virtual theater so we can go see some movies together. We keep
I'm telling you.
It's all these times where we, he and I are the only ones that want to see something.
I really hope that one actually is better than the first trailer made me think. Mm-hmm. So... box office, Taken 3 took number one, 39.2 million. I am shocked it made that much. I really am, but we'll talk about that shortly. Selma opened at number two with 11.3 million. It's got 13.5 total. Into the Woods, still holding in there, 9.5 million. It's got 105 million total. Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, 9.3 million for a $236 million total. Getting pretty close to Desolation, but it's not there yet. And Unbroken is at number five with $8.1 million for a $101 million total.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week we'll give you a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was mine, and it was When Harry Met Sally. Such a beautiful movie. Just beautiful.
I love that movie.
It's so good. Those that got it correct. D.A. Cheney, Inga Kolstad, Joe Montemurro, Michael Lonergan, and Shane Hoens. I think I'm better with pronunciations when I'm on DayQuil, by the way, just so you guys know. This week, it is Justin's turn. So if you think you know what this clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Here is your clip.
Go home. Forget this thing. I can recognize an obsession. No good will come of it.
Well, hasn't good come of your obsessions?
At first, but I followed them too long. I am their slave. And one day they will choose to destroy me.
If you understand an obsession, then you know you won't change my mind.
So be it.
Will you build it?
I've already begun to build it, Mr. Antier.
All right. Now, if you guys, I want to know how many people get that one right. That's a good one. Let's go to reviews. We've only got one movie to review this week, and that is Taken 3. Now, Brian, this time nobody really gets took. So what is Taken 3 about?
Well, this time, Brian Mills is accused of a murder that, surprise, he did not do, or he didn't even witness it. But he's tracked and pursued by the police. And, of course, he's got to rely on his fantastic set of skills to not only clear his name, but to, you know, find the true killer and, you know, kind of protect the ones he loves. So it was directed by probably one of the coolest names in directors nowadays, Olivier Megaton.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's not one of the coolest directors working, but that's beside the point.
That starts somewhere.
So ultimately, I mean, really, what did you think about it? I mean, it breaks down to it. This isn't a movie, you know, normally we break things down by acting, story, production. That's generally how we try to do things. I would say Taken 3 doesn't have any of that stuff. It just, they just threw Liam Neeson into a movie and said, here, run for your life and break shit. And we're just going to have the camera rolling the whole time. That's what I got. That's honestly what I felt walking in.
Yeah. I don't know why the Taken was even put on this movie. You know, the name Taken was even put on this because it didn't feel like any of the other movies. It didn't, it just didn't fit with the whole franchise. This is one of those franchises. I think I've even told you this before, but you know, this is one of those things that it should not have been drawn out to a franchise. This is where the studios got greedy, rightfully so. I mean, it's understandable. They had a hit and wanted to capitalize on it. I get it. But this is one where if it was just the first movie, it would have been just lionized into movie history as being one of the best action films in the last 20 years or so. But because it's been, you know, Taken 2, which wasn't too bad.
No, I like Taken 2. Yeah.
You know, but it was definitely, I mean, a step down because, you know, it just kind of did a lot of the same stuff as Taken 1. And now the Taken 3 just really had a little bit of the same stuff, but it just didn't, again, it just didn't have the same feel. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe because a lot of it was like so Tony Scott fast paced blurred scenes that were super close. So much of the movie is just right up in your, you know, in their grill. It just,
here's the thing I had with the movie is I'm glad that they went a different direction. I think that's great. You know, I'm fine with the fact if you're going to keep making these movies with Liam Neeson, fine, but just change it up because somebody gets took and then he goes and gets him. That's basically the whole movie. Okay. You've got this whole, he's got this whole elite special forces unit. Why he doesn't have to save one of them, I still don't understand why that plot never surfaced. But you've got a guy who they have spent two movies explaining how fucking intelligent this guy is, right? He is smart. He can figure some. He can walk into a room, figure everything about that room out in a matter of seconds, and he dispatches villains nonstop. And this one, and it's not a spoiler alert, seriously, it's the whole setup of the movie. He walks in, sees a bloody knife, picks it. He does like the movie Thriller from the 80s thing, which is, oh, look at that bloody knife. Got to pick that shit up. Got my fingerprints all over it. Just because that's the only way that this plot moves forward. It's that kind of movie where it's tons and tons of the most generic plot devices I could possibly think of. It was basic. It was bland. Then you get to the direction by Olivier Megaton, who is, I'm sure, a wonderfully named person, but he is not a very talented director. He's done several movies now that he's just not a good director. He does the, when Brian was talking about the Tony Scott factor, he does quick cuts, which is he can't do a single scene without going, you know, Liam Neeson's walking down the street. He's got to cut to the street, to Liam Neeson, to the Liam Neeson's face, to the window, to the mailbox, to the street, you know, and that's like 1 minute. There's no reason for that. He can't hold a camera still and stop cutting. So you never know what the hell's going on. The action scenes are not good.
Yeah, and it works at times for a fight scene, which is, you know, okay, cool. I get the, you know, the fast pace. It builds that that speed of the fight and everything. Okay, great. But like you say, if you're jogging down the street or getting some bagels, I don't need 25 cuts shot in, you know, in – say 20 seconds of, you know, your exchange with the bagel mistress and the getting your receipt and the looking and locking the door or walking out the door or jogging out, whatever. I don't need, just give me a couple of 4 to 6 second shots maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that works.
And the other thing is this movie has shown that I really think Liam Neeson, the action hero, is kind of coming up to the end. Whenever they shoot his action scenes, I mean, he doesn't seem fast-paced. He doesn't seem like he did in the first movie. It's like, wow, he moved quick like a panther. Here, he just lumbers along. And it's like, oh bother. And just, I didn't buy any of the action scenes. I really thought he would have been dead about 5 minutes into this movie if it was real life, just because I don't know. He needed a better double or something. I don't know. But it just, throughout the movie, I did not buy it. I did not enjoy it. I was really irritated by the time it was over. The very end of it, there is some payoff. And I kind of liked the last action scene. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, it's not a film I really enjoyed at all.
There were a couple of good things. I thought Forrest Whitaker was really good. I thought now this is a writing issue, not an acting issue, but I mean, he's Forrest Whitaker. You know, he gives that. He's weird because he can pull off this smile, but brings out this scary intensity at the same time. And, but there's a scene right after the knife incident where he could pretty much, You know, he could pretty much stop this movie with one act, maybe two acts tops, and this movie would have been done in real life. But, he, you know, he's made out to be this brilliant investigator, and yet he makes something that's blatantly obvious to me, and I've got no detective skills at all.
Exactly.
And I'm just going, why didn't you just do this? And, you know, he doesn't do it. But
I think we both would be better special forces officers at this point.
But I agree with you. I did also like the fact that they brought in, you see more of his friends. They're not just in there for like 12 seconds, like the last two movies.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So they did bring them in, use them more, which I thought was a positive.
So if $10 is full price of admission, what do you give it?
I'm just giving it a 5. It's just middle of the road. There's a couple of good things. There's more bad. I won't hold the Taken this against the Taken friend, you know, the first movie at all, but I won't watch this one again. I can promise you that.
Yeah, I give it 4. Same thing. I'll never watch it again. It's one of those, like, seriously, the plot was irritating me. I wanted to punch people when it was going. I'm like, why did you do that? It's one of those movies where I was screaming at the screen. That's never good. Justin, you saw Get On Up real quick. That's the James Brown biopic?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I liked it mostly because of the lead actor. Please, Scotty, what is his name?
Chadwick Boseman.
Thank you. Chadwick Boseman. When you watch him be James Brown, it's almost as though he is possessed by the spirit of James Brown. He is so good in his mannerisms, his dancing, the way that he talks, the way that he carries himself. It is so good. Unfortunately for me, the film itself wasn't nearly as good. It went a little too artsy for a biopic for me, where it's jumping back and forth in his life and it's having like his past self commenting on things going on presently in the film. It was a little too much for me. It's like, if you're going to do a biopic, just tell me the guy's story. Don't try and glam it up with all kinds of tricks and techniques. But Chadwick Boseman as an actor and as James Brown was mesmerizing. So it's not a terrible film. It's just not as good as I would have hoped. $1 out of $10, I'd give it a solid $6. And I'd recommend just watch it once for Boseman's performance. And then, you know, get on up and put something else in the player.
Wow. You're slipping, man. I don't know. I think it's old age. Jeez. Scotty, let's go to DVD and video on demand.
January 13th, we've got a few releases here. The first one on DVD is Coherence. Now, we talked about this one in the past. We watched it on video on demand. We didn't officially review this one, so I don't have scores, but it comes highly recommended by
Justin. Really dug it, and there's an interview with the director, mm-hmm. with Justin.
Yeah, I highly enjoyed it as well. I thought it was really good. Did you see it?
Mm-hmm. It was very good. Oh, yeah, so it's good. A mind fuck.
The premise of this one, and this is one of those movies that's hard to give you the plot because the plot is what's really interesting, but you don't want to go in, you want to kind of go into it not knowing it. But basically, people are getting together for dinner. Some strange things start happening, including a comet is flying overhead. And that's all you need to go into this movie. I know that doesn't sound like I'm selling it, but check out this movie. It's worth a watch. It's a mind bender for sure. One we did review, though, was Annabelle. Justin reviewed this one on episode 161, where he gave it $6. This is the follow-up to 2013's The Conjuring, where a couple begins to experience terrifying supernatural occurrences involving a vintage doll shortly after their home is invaded by satanic cultists. That is the same doll that appeared in The Conjuring as well.
And we already determined, just burn the fucking thing. The movie's over.
I think Brian determined.
I've got a plan for that shit.
One I saw was Lucy. This is Scarlett Johansson.
She's got some explaining to do. Sorry, I don't know why I had to say that. Go ahead.
Wow.
I apologize for my joke before I even said it.
I just watched it. It was better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, well, it's a little more science fiction-y than the trailer lets on to believe, so I find that very believable that you enjoyed it more than I
did. I hope she used the full capacity of her brain.
Oh, my God. Scarlett Johansson plays a woman who is accidentally caught in a dark deal and turns the tables on her captors by transforming into a merciless warrior evolved beyond human logic.
In tank tops.
Yeah.
Think about how awesome she would be if they combined her with Johnny Depp and Transcendence.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Oh, that's scary.
You might have a good movie, too.
That is one movie, by the way, that just I feel like I get polarizing views on that one. People either just
I didn't hate it, okay. But it's...
Well, you're the exception to the rule then. People either hate...
I didn't like it either. It's somewhere in that murky gray area.
Really? Mm-hmm. See, most people...
It's better than Taken 3, I can tell you that.
The last one on disc is The Box Trolls. This is a stop-motion film. It's based on the children's novel Here Be Monsters by Alan Snow. It's about a young orphan boy raised by underground cave-dwelling trash collectors who tries to save his friends from an evil exterminator. Brian and I saw that one. We didn't give it a...
Aaron and you.
So. Oh, I apologize. Aaron
Man. I couldn't make it that weekend.
Yeah, it was a long drive. We saw this in the theater. We didn't really give it...
No, we gave it scores. We just didn't officially say it out loud. But I gave it a 4. I really did not like it at all.
Yeah, and I gave it a 3, so...
Yeah, sorry.
So,
sorry, guys. Critics loved it. Because it's British.
Probably. But last one we do have, though, we have a video on demand one. This movie's called Vice. It releases on January 16th. Bruce Willis stars in this sci-fi thriller about ultimate resort Vice, where customers can play out their wildest fantasies with artificial inhabitants who look like humans. It also stars Thomas Jane, who I think is a little underrated, actually.
Yeah, I like Thomas Jane a lot. But I did watch the trailer, and it looks very much like current Bruce Willis. Not like old, cool Bruce Willis. It's the modern day... I just showed up, got my check, went home. Bruce Willis.
He was awesome in Looper.
Yeah, how many years ago was that, Scott? It's been a few years.
3 or 4?
Yeah, well, he's been riding the diehard teat for a couple years, and he's just...
In Expendables. Oh. And... mm-hmm. All right, well, it's that time of the show where we like to have a little bit of fun. A lot of you guys remember some of our other segments here, like Stump the Hoe and... this week it's time to do some recasting the classics, and Steve Peterson, one of our listeners, asked us to do recast the movie Clerks. So we're not going to go full blown around the horn and have everyone cast all the characters like we usually do, but instead we're going to kind of each take turns, and each of us have been assigned one of the characters from the film. So
and I'm abstaining completely.
Oh, Aaron's abstaining completely.
Mm-hmm.
So Justin is going to recast Dante. Brian's going to recast Randall. I'm going to be recasting Veronica, and then all three of us are going to be recasting Jay and Silent Bob. So let's start at the top of the order with Justin. Justin, who's going to be your Dante?
It's going to be a controversial choice, but I'm going with Daniel Radcliffe.
I don't think it's controversial. That's good.
Yeah. I like that.
He's the right age. After seeing him in Horns, he can totally pull off the accent. And I would like to just see him do something where I get to laugh through it instead of Horns or The Woman in Black or the Harry Potter movies where it's, you know, serious all the time.
Well, now that
a comedy.
Now that I've seen Horns, I can picture him saying 37 dicks. So
Yeah.
In a row?
In a row?
In a row? I'm not even supposed to be here today.
I could see it. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Are you bummed that it's not controversial?
No, I'm actually glad everybody kind of sees the same thing I did. No, I'm not bummed at all.
Brian?
Cool.
Brian. I'm sorry.
All right, well, with Randall, you need that sidekick guy that, you know, just doesn't really offer a whole lot, but he tends to pop off on things and maybe just stir up the pot a little bit. And, you know, so I kind of thought about putting me in there. But
you're busy.
Yeah, but that probably wouldn't go over too well for the studio. So I went with Blake Anderson from Workaholics. He's the frizzy...
Oh, yeah.
Headed guy with a mustache.
I have no idea who that is.
Comedy Central show.
I don't watch that show. So,
yeah, you ought to check it out. It's pretty funny.
That's a good call, Brian. I like that one.
So,
Scott likes maybe, it, so yeah. I'm on board.
Yeah, maybe. Appreciate it, Scott.
Justin, you know who this
somebody
guy is?
Out there. I'm sure somebody out there knows who I'm talking about. So,
what, I don't count?
I said it, Scott. No, vouch for it, then I'm good. God, sensitive fucking
and I did say...
Everybody needs hugs this week. Jesus Christ.
I was joking. All right. Well, I got a pick for Veronica, and if the name doesn't sound familiar, this was the character in the movie that was Dante's girlfriend. She had
the sucker of the 37 dicks.
Sucker of the 37 dicks. So,
yep.
Mine probably will be a little more controversial because... this one's kind of a guilty pleasure. Like, I want this person to be in this role.
You guys keep saying kind of. Are people going to pick at the show over this, really? Maybe we should hold back on the controversy.
Number one, I don't know if if my actress will align well with Daniel Radcliffe, who I think is a really good pick, but I kind of want to see it. I think she's a little bit older, but I think I want to see Emily Blunt do it, and let me explain why.
She's like 20 years older than them.
She's old.
I know. She's
supposed to be like a 20-something year. She's like 35,
well, 40. I wasn't recasting all of them.
She's nearly dead.
Exactly. According to my math,
she's so old.
She's almost dead. Continue. It's your pick.
Right. Well, if I recast all of them,
controversial
they
because
been...
she's not going to live for filming.
I want to see Emily Blunt do. She's done some movies where she did an American accent, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see her do that.
The British people can do that. We can't do the opposite.
Right. I want to see her do that.
Like, hello, governor.
She was Italian, right? And that the girlfriend was like had this Italian accent or.
I don't remember.
New York, Jersey. Yeah.
Filipino, whatever.
I want to see Emily Blunt do that.
Okay. Hey, it's your pick. Even if she's 20 years older than her boyfriend.
Yep.
That's fine.
Well, again, I didn't know that Daniel Radcliffe was going to be the pick, so.
Apparently you're thinking teacher student still, huh? Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Justin, who do you got for Jay and Silent Bob? I'm really curious to see who you guys suspect.
All right. For Silent Bob, I went with a guy named Clark Duke. Some of you may remember him. He was the young guy on the Hot Tub Time Machine movies.
Oh, that's a good call.
He was also on Sex Drive. I think he's a funny guy. He's a heavyset guy. He'd have to. I think he should grow the beard out, but I would love to see him try that. And for Jay, I'm laughing at my own choice. Yes. I went with Mark L. Young. Not a name probably you guys are familiar with, mm-hmm. but if I say he played Scotty P. in We're the Millers,
okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Not mean?
Yeah, he was no regrets. Also, not even
yeah,
one.
No regrets.
Not even one letter?
Not even one letter? I think he would be a really funny Jay.
That's a really good call. That's
okay.
Really good.
Cool.
What about you, Brian?
All right, with Jay, you need somebody that is kind of funny, but also kind of annoying. He kind of irritates you, so I went with Russell Brand. I went with Russell Brand. Just crazy. I'm not a big fan of his. The dude is nuts. Annoying enough, but he's also just funny enough. And with Silent Bob, kind of going with sticking with the Brits here, Nick Frost.
Okay. Oh, that's not bad.
So you we could, have a you know, British Jay and Silent Bob. That's not bad.
Oh, one doesn't talk, you know. So you won't even know.
yeah, exactly. Silent Bob won't say a word, so he just sits there. But he could pull off the facial gestures to kind of, you know what I mean? He's still funny enough with his facial expressions that he could pull off being funny too. So
that's true.
Silent Bob had one line in Clerks.
That's true. He did have one line. One line. And in the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, he talked a lot. He gave a whole monologue.
Yeah. Yep.
Chasing Amy had a fucking soliloquy.
Yeah, Mallrats.
Yep. Yeah, he did some talking.
Yeah, he did some talking there.
Scott, the joke was kind of dead at that point. No, I haven't. Okay. I actually, Brian.
Emily Blunt.
Yeah. No, I had Russell Brand as well, too.
Donald Sutherland.
For Jay. But I had a backup one just in case somebody else picked it because I thought it might have been popular. And this is one just because I want to see it happen. Because this is a guy that's younger, that is an actor that is a superb actor that I want to see him pull off a crazy stoner role, and that's Paul Dano.
Okay,
Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
I want to see Paul Dano pull off Jason Mewes just because I want to see it, just how he does it. My Silent Bob, Jorge Garcia.
Oh, I love Jorge.
So do I.
Aw.
And I haven't like seen Jorge. Him in much of anything. So.
Hey, you know what? I was thinking, you know, Horatio Sands. So.
You guys are just thinking every fat actor you know.
That's right. We were sharing the same brain this week.
I think it should be Tyler Labine. Fuck, I wish I'd have thought of that before.
Well, you didn't.
Tyler who?
I sure didn't.
All right, now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. This week we're going to talk. Sean St. Clair wrote in a while back, and he wanted us to talk about film adaptations. And we said we were going to do our listener topics throughout this early part of the year. And when he says film adaptations, he wants to be specific to exclude Marvel and DC, you know, all the comic book heroes. So can't bring up comic books. And I would actually say Lord of the Rings, but I think it's going to come up at some point. But let's like keep that to a minimum. Let's not just make this a Peter Jackson fucking talk. So we're going to talk about the stuff that he asked us about. Number one, the first question he wanted to know was how much of the original work should appear in the film. Now, when we're talking adaptations, we're talking about produced from written works, books, novels, musicals, whatever. So, Justin, how much of the original work should appear in the film to you?
As much as makes sense for the adaptation. Trying to convert a book of almost any size into a film is difficult because you've got this expectation of from so many people of bringing this story that so many people may love and know by heart, and suddenly you're going to bring them a new media version of it, and there's so much expectation that goes into it. I know, you know, Lord of the Rings had that, where everybody was just, well, are they going to have the songs in it? Are they going to have these, you know, potentially off-putting characters in it, and on and on. It makes it difficult because you have to satisfy that. You don't have to, but I think you as a director, and maybe the actors and the writers, you should strive to please everyone, but try especially to please maybe those who are familiar with it, because without those fans loving that work, most likely that work would never have been offered up for an adaptation that these people are now working on. But if the film, you know, if you're talking about a book that's incredibly thick or convoluted, cut out what that movie doesn't need. Cut out characters that aren't required. Cut out all the scenes. Get it down to the bare bones. For me, I have always said, if you present the spirit of the book or the play or whatever we're talking about, the spirit of it, then I am going to be fine with whatever changes you feel like you have to make. But as soon as you fundamentally change the work, then I think you've definitely gone down the wrong path.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, you're saying as long as the theme remains, right? So
yeah. Spirit of the work.
Yeah, I'm okay with even changing characters, adding characters. I'm okay with all of that. But in terms of what should stay there from the original work, like just as much as necessary, whatever is necessary. I think it's really hard to just give them parameters because essentially you don't know. Everything's different. I mean, some things you need, like Jurassic Park. You kind of need the science that Crichton built in that book to make that movie work. So you need to add that. But some of the other stuff, do you really need it? I mean, not necessarily. I mean, some of that would work without it. You could cut out a couple of the dinosaurs, which they did, and it didn't really impact the movie at all.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, adapting these things is just as much of an art form as any other kind of medium. It takes a lot of skill to be able to take this huge work or play or musical or book or whatever you have and condense that down into a real small bit. That's a craft. But I still think you want to get as much into that as you can without making the film too long, where you get something like we talked about Lord of the Rings, where you've got how many hours of cut footage do they have in those things? Isn't there like hours upon hours?
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot.
I mean, some people dig that, but maybe that's something to do where you've got like, you know, pick which version you want. You want the cliff notes or you want the whole shebang? You know what I mean?
Well, in some adaptations, they don't even have, I mean, they just borrow titles. Mm-hmm. I mean, Psycho is really, if you read the book, not as nearly as similar as the, Justin, did you ever read Psycho?
No, I never have.
It's completely different, really. I mean,
well, if you look at the Bond movies, they'll quite often use the titles from the books. But they have no fucking correlation to what the actual film is. They just use the title of that book.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it improves it. Not every book is. I think people, whatever you read or see first, that's always what I say people go with. Mm-hmm. If you read the book first, the book's gonna be better than the movie. If you saw the movie first, movie's gonna be better than the book. So on and so forth. I really think that it just depends on if you enjoy it. Not every book is infallible. Sometimes you just need to lose a lot of that stuff. A lot of writers embellish and write way too much. They envision their worlds because it's their world. So they add way more detail than is ever necessary for a film. So it makes sense to me that you would trim a lot of that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you mentioned Jurassic Park. The first film, a pretty good adaptation of that book.
Mm-hmm.
The second film?
Not even close.
A fucking shitty adaptation of that book. Same director, a lot of the same actors, probably a lot of the same crew. One's a good adaptation, one's a shitty one. Where is the, you know, what causes that difference? For me, part of what caused the difference is they took what was a really cool book and a cool dinosaur idea, and then they completely threw that out in favor of this idea of a mini Godzilla in California. I mean, it was idiotic, and it really made no sense. I think this is one of those cases where if they stuck to the book and its ideas, they probably would have had a much more interesting film instead of what – I don't know what possessed Spielberg to do what he did. I honestly don't, considering how good the first film was.
I mean, I don't know. The conversation kind of evolved from a different way where I was going to chime in. This is really one of those topics that I really don't have a whole lot to offer because I don't – there's not a wide selection of movies that I've – both seen the movie and read the book on.
Kind of the same.
But I got to agree with Scott's sentiment where you just kind of got to squeeze in as much as you can from the book, but still move the movie along at a good pace, whether it's a 2.5 hour movie, whether it's 1 hour and 45 minutes, you've still got to keep moving forward throughout the movie at an entertaining fashion. But whatever you've got to do to cram as much of that story into it, you should do it and honor the book, the play, the whatever the subject matter is. Honor it as much as possible. And you should make it gear it towards the fan of that subject as much as possible so that, but also it's a fine line because you got to leave enough out so where that person that's pumped about it sees that. And then they're talking to their friends that they went to see it with who maybe is not familiar with the property. They can say, oh my God, well, you remember this part? They go into so much more detail about that. You like this scene. There's, you know, 3 or 4 chapters on it, you know, so give them enough to where I guess they're still excited about it, but also leave out enough or maybe give subtle little hints in the background of the movie.
I gotcha.
Kind of get that, you know, the little nuggets for the fans. Give them something to look for.
Now, how much exposition and character development should be removed to keep the movie in that 120-minute butter zone is what Sean calls it.
See, this is hard for me because, to me, character development is my favorite part of books and movies or books and plays and musicals. You know, obviously, it can't be the majority of the movie. You can't have nothing but character development. You got to have.
Well, you can. I mean, a lot of dramas do that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you got to have some kind of plot. You can't just have some overarching.
Tell that to Paul Thomas Anderson. That's all I'm saying.
You got to have enough character development to portray what made the original source material so good. You know, but the problem is there's no magical formula. It depends on movie to movie. I mean, some adaptations that I think are good stayed very close to the source material. Some were completely different and were still a good movie. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? There's no paint-by-numbers way to do it. You kind of said that with the last point. So,
The one thing, especially when it comes to exposition, here's what I think sometimes if the book gives a lot of exposition because they feel like they have to, I don't think a movie necessarily has to do that. I think you've got a visual medium where you don't have that in a book. You have to paint the picture, where in a movie the picture is painted for you.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have nearly as much exposition to me.
Exactly. One of my favorite book series, there's literally a 2-page section that describes a 7-second scene that would, if it were done in a movie.
Yeah, I don't want that. Yeah. You don't need exposition for things like that. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things I think you can easily do visually and move on. You know, whereas I think some bad directors would probably just sit there and keep dealing with the exposition, or bad screenplay writers, however you want to take it.
Mm-hmm.
The exposition is one thing. I just don't think it's necessary. I think a good director can find ways to give exposition without it having to be a monologue.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it depends. There's so many factors involved, though. I mean, like what Harrison Ford did in Blade Runner. Yeah, he did a lot of voiceover narration in that movie, but he is such a talented actor. He's got such a great voice. It wasn't a chore to listen to that kind of exposition or that kind of narration. Other films aren't quite as fortunate to have somebody who can do it. But then again, Blade Runner is one of those books that made, I think, a better film than it made a story. And I think the reason for that is because it took a lot of liberties and added a lot of things that the books didn't have. And I think the movie was better for it.
Should the film add elements to flesh things out or explain something obscure in the original work?
I think it should to a certain extent, but I also think that those are the types of things that you can kind of give the nod to the person who's read the, you know, we keep saying book. I think that's kind of what we're all kind of leaning towards more than musicals or plays or what have you. But those are the things that those little nuances, the background stuff. I want to say there was one of the YA books recently that's been turned into movies. There was a character in the background that was nondescript. It was never brought to the forefront. They were like a servant. I want to say The Hunger Games.
Yeah, The Hunger Games, The Mutes.
They're white. They got some little face garb or something. And, you know, you really only see them once or twice. They're serving dinner or standing there waiting to, I don't know, take a napkin or something. I don't know. But there's apparently like this big, you know, there's a lot more information about them in the books. And, you know, I think those are the types of things that we really don't need to know that for the movie. But if you, you know, it's in there enough. And if you go back, you watch the movie first and you go back and you read the books and then you find out more stuff about them. It enjoys, you know, it allows the person who's familiar with probably 80% of the story to enjoy that extra little bit. So,
well, that kind of reminds me of the house elves and their whole issue that Hermione went on and on about in the books. You never saw that once in the movies, and the movies weren't lesser because that stuff wasn't there. There's all sorts of little, you know, B plots and C plots that a book can have that the movie just doesn't need. I mean, fuck, there's no time for it.
No, I mean, John Grisham books are notorious for that. They have so many different plot threads going at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could really get all of them in there and do them all justice. I mean, you really have to have a talented screenplay writer and or a talented director, whoever, working cohesively to determine exactly what needs to be in the movie and what needs to be excised. And as long as you have those elements, I think you're going to get a good movie. As long as what Justin said at the very beginning of this is that you keep the tone and the theme of whatever the original work is in mind, I really think most things work out. I mean, even Jaws. Jaws is an okay book. I don't think it's a great book at all. I'm sure some people think Peter Benchley is a fantastic terror underwater writer. I thought it was just okay. But the movie is phenomenal, and it's because of a lot of the things that happened when it was because of the director, not necessarily the screenplay. It was how the director visually told that story because of problems and things that came up. I think it's important that the talent behind the camera and behind the pen are definitely more important than necessarily picking out what needs to be there and what doesn't need to be there. Because I think if you have someone who's talented, they know what to get rid of or what to add.
Well, and at the end of the day, the film has to stand on its own. You know what I mean?
To be independent of the written work. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So you can't, it can't rely on the original written work, or it shouldn't have to reference it 100%. I'm always of the mind that I'd like to see as much from the book into the movie as you can, but sometimes it can't be done, and you need to be able to let that movie stand on its own. So, well,
you know, another example of a movie that's better than the book is Shawshank Redemption.
Well, it's a story. It's not even a book.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty, you know, it's a short story. It's a part of four stories, but it's not especially short. It's still a several hour read. But one of the things in the book that they changed is the wardens. In the story, there are multiple wardens of Shawshank that our characters have to deal with. But I think one of the things that they wisely did in the film was to keep one warden. Why? Because you've got a central antagonist, mm-hmm. that runs from the beginning of the film through to the end of the film. Plus, it also had Morgan Freeman doing a lot of the talking, and that just about improves anything.
I wonder if it's possible to read that book without hearing his voice.
No. I actually read that story before and after the movie. It reads completely different after the movie.
Yeah.
To me, anyway. Yeah.
Well, Aaron, let me ask you this.
Get busy living or get busy dying.
Do you think that film adaptations should inspire those who maybe haven't read the original to do so? And what kind of balancing act should filmmakers perform to attract those who have?
I don't think filmmakers should do anything. I don't think the people making the movie don't really care if you read the book. They really don't care.
No, they don't get a cut of that for sure.
No, they really don't care. They're actually benefiting because of book sales. Should it inspire people or should it inspire people to read it? Not really. I don't really care. It's a benefit. It's a good thing for the writer, because they're the ones that created those worlds. But I really think the films benefit more from the books and the books benefit from the films generally. Because I think like Harry Potter, if those books wouldn't have been so phenomenally successful, I don't think those movies would have been nearly as phenomenally successful. So the books led to the movies. Everybody had to see this brought to the big screen. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings, everybody had to see this brought to the big screen. And then you've got Shawshank Redemption, which I think is a phenomenal adaptation because it takes a very small story and creates this big screen film that really they had to add a lot to. Green Mile, same thing, and it's still Stephen King. But, you know, you've got a short series of stories. It's a little bigger than Shawshank, but they still had to incorporate a bunch of stuff to make it work. And I don't really know if it inspired anybody to go read those books. I think if you were a fan of it originally, that's why you went and saw the movie, but I don't think it worked reversed. I don't know anybody that saw Green Mile and said, I got to read the books now. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, I think it's really tricky how that works. It seems like it only works for I don't know. I lost my point.
See, I think if they aspire to make a good film, that's as much as they can do. And that's more than anything that's going to get people to actually maybe want to read the book. Because if they really enjoyed the movie, they might think to themselves, well, if this 2-hour experience was this good, then hopefully, 8-10 hour experience of reading the book, maybe even better. Who knows if that actually pans out, but just make a good film. Don't worry about, the audience so much of people who've already read it. Just make a good film. If you can make those people happy though, then I think you've done especially good work.
I think they need to make a movie close to the theme of whatever the book is, because the fans of that work will be a vocal critic, and people will take their opinion more so than a regular critic because they are fans of the work. Does that make sense? So I think in that respect, that's really the only reason they try to get things close is to appease that small, that vocal minority.
But I'm kind of like one of those people that Justin was talking about, that I don't read as much as you guys. I mostly listen, yes. But outside of that, when it comes to book, if I'm choosing a book, or if I'm either going by something that was recommended to me directly, like you need to read this book, or it's written by somebody that I know, right? We've talked about that earlier. And then after that, I'm going to something that I've seen the movie before, because I love to compare and contrast and see what is similar to it, or I like going in with a little bit of familiarity about the book. So I'm one of those that I'm going to go pick a book of a movie that I've seen just because, hey, I like the movie. Maybe I'll like the book, since the books are supposed to be better.
I'm telling you, I personally think it's whatever you saw or read first. Mm-hmm. Read the book, saw the movie. Whatever you did first, that's generally the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that's whatever painted the picture of that world. Like Gone Girl, I went back and read the book after I saw the movie, which is fucked up movie. The book is more fucked up, but it wasn't a better book or anything. I mean, it's really the same, it's close. It's a similar story. But I really like the movie better because that's what I saw first. Mm. And going to the book, all I'm doing is, man, I've already been here. You know, so I'm not really getting a whole lot new. I get a little bit more detail.
I like that.
But though, I'm not getting a lot new. I don't like that. I feel like I'm just retreading.
Yeah. I feel like I'm in familiar territory, and I kind of feel like I know a little bit already. Like, I don't want to be spoiled in a movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But going into a book for whatever reason, kind of, I feel like, oh, I know this part's coming up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, sometimes a movie surprises. To Kill a Mockingbird is a very good book. It's a great movie. I really think sometimes it can actually make a book better, visually realizing it. I don't know. Also, The Mist. I do want to bring this up. And, Justin, you can – I'm sure you don't have to say anything because you know your thoughts. You don't like the ending. But to take a book where – and I won't spoil how the book ends, but it's a very ambiguous ending. And then in the movie, they actually give it a definitive ending because it's a visual medium, and I think it plays better for most audiences outside of Justin. I think those are the kinds of things you need to do to make adaptations really work, personal opinion. I think you need to understand this is a visual medium and you need to do something different. It doesn't, you know, just needs to be different.
I agree. It is. It's a completely different medium. Therefore, it's got its own requirements, its own rules. And if you try and do everything the book did, you're just going to fail.
Do you think too many filmmakers try to just copy the book and don't realize, hey, we got to make a movie here?
I think too many don't know what to cut. And they don't know how to hone the story down to a narrative that you can safely deliver in a 2-hour time frame.
Isn't that the job, maybe more the job of the producer or producers to kind of step in and say, you know, hey, director guy, aren't you getting maybe a little bit off track here?
Or the screenwriters? I mean, isn't that their job?
Nah, screenwriter. Once it starts filming and stuff, unless they need them to rewrite a scene that maybe the director feels doesn't work, for the most part, they're, from my understanding of the biz, they don't have any say-so as far as telling the director that he needs to focus more on this part than that part.
It really depends on the director. It really does. I mean, if you've got somebody that's got like Final Cut and script approval and everything else, then he's determining everything. Like, trust me, Spielberg, he don't care what the producer says. Well, he usually does.
Well, I mean, granted, there's, I mean, the exception to every rule, but I mean, the producer is also, I mean, I know he's got a lot to do with the budgets and locations and what have you, but they're also on there to kind of keep things focused on the, you know, to collaborate with the director to say, well, look, you know, I thought we were trying to give this message, but you're wanting to do this. And it kind of steers us off course a little bit. You know, is this what you really want to do? Or, you know, in that, hey, I trust you doing the right thing, but what do you think about this? You know, so I don't know.
Is there anything more you guys want to bring up on adaptations? In terms of does anything really frustrate you about adaptations? Especially if you're a fan of the original work?
Only if it goes really far away from what I'm expecting. I mean, it's one thing to have, you know, a world built in my head of whatever subject matter is. But when you, you know, turn a, let's, you know, I don't know, a big, I don't know, big Greek battle into a musical, then all right, that's wow, that's different. I didn't, you know, get that when I read the book, you know, but
that sounds fantastic, yeah, by the way.
No, that sounds absolutely atrocious.
No, I kind of want to see that movie. Yep. I want to see 300 the musical. That's what I want to see.
Oh man.
I think I would
this
just...
is Sparta.
I think I would only bring up The Walking Dead as an example of a group of people taking a premise, and this group of people includes the creator of The Walking Dead. They took a premise, but then decided that they were going to make their own story based on that premise and not follow the comic book slavishly. Sure, there are characters that are in the comic books that are in the show, but then there's also characters in the show that the books never had. I mean, Daryl Dixon, he did not exist in the comic books. He's purely a creation of the show, but the show is better because of him. There are themes and some elements of the comic books that come in and out, but it's its own creation. And I think, you know, it's a really great adaptation that follows the spirit, as I said, but it's not being slavish about it. And I love that Robert Kirkman has been so happy to take his creation and then spin it and say, well, what if I had done this? It's a neat exercise for a creator to have a known product, but then get an opportunity to change some of the lineup and to re-spin it and see what new things come out of it. It's really good work.
You just had to break the rule, didn't you?
It is a comic book. Shit. You can delete all that out. You're right.
I want everybody to know that you're a fucking rebel. That's what I'm going to do.
Sorry, it's not Marvel or DC, and he said Marvel or DC. This is Image. So, it's still a comic is that a technicality book. That works?
It's a graphic novel. It's not a comic book.
Well, no, it's a comic book.
No, that one's a comic book. Some of our listeners, we asked them what their favorite adaptations were, because we figure instead of us rattling off a list, we'll tell you what theirs are. Jonathan Spear said Lord of the Rings. It's a masterpiece. I think we can all agree that Lord of the Rings is one that should be on there. Said Lord of the Rings, Jonathan Spear, Sean McGuire, Angela Wallach. A lot of people like Lord of the Rings. That's what I'm hearing. Josh Diamond, The Exorcist. I didn't even think about that. That's a very good point. Anna Maria Germa, Ordinary People. Do you guys ever see Ordinary People? It's an 80s movie. Wow. And Brian, did you lose something?
Sorry, I dropped my pen. I apologize.
Justin. Pass.
I just like to blame you. That's just how it goes.
Obviously so.
Just get back in your corner and shut up. Scott Calgaro said Shawshank Redemption. We talked about that one. David McGrath says his favorite movie is Field of Dreams, based on Shoeless Joe. Ah, that's very good. I did not realize that it was based on a book. Did anybody else know that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think you guys are just agreeing. Craig Schermerhorn, 13th Warrior. Adapted from the book Eaters of the Dead. Did you read the book?
I actually did read the book before I saw the movie and liked the movie way better.
Really?
Yep.
All right. Paula Sells says, P.S. I love you, A Message in a Bottle. Nicholas Sparks is a really big name right now, isn't he?
Jerry's he's getting divorced.
No, is he really?
Yes, he is. Isn't that ironic?
That's got to be.
Don't you think?
Apparently his wife said that sweet gifts and overtures don't translate into orgasms.
No, she did not say that.
That's what she said.
Wow. That's going to leave a mark. Douglas Clayton's Secret Window. I don't know if I was a fan of that one. But
the Johnny Depp movie.
Yeah, right? And he didn't have makeup on, so maybe that's why it didn't work for me personally.
John Turturro is in that too, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't like you stole my story.
That was a Stephen King one, right?
Yes, it was. Yep.
Yeah.
It was based on his novella, Secret Window, Hidden Garden. Right. Michael Brudenell, he's the Lord of the Rings devotee, but he's going to throw in The Green Mile. Hmm? He thinks The Green Mile. That was a very, very good adaptation. I did actually read those books, and very good adaptation. Steve Peterson, you give it to The Prestige. Was that a popular movie? I can't even remember. I think it only made like $50 million, but
I think it's gained popularity when it hit video. More people talk about it than it earned in theaters.
Yeah, that's true.
It was way better than The Illusionist with Edward Norton.
God, yes, yeah.
And it was better than the book.
Sean St. Clair, who actually offered this topic, says Fight Club, end of story. I don't think it's end of story, Sean, because there's a lot more options here. But that's a good point.
I do think that is a great adaptation.
Did you read the book?
I did. I read the book after it, and that's when I liked the – well, yeah, to your theory, I liked the movie better. The book.
You are not your khakis.
I haven't fucked like this. That was in grade school.
The book reads – yeah, that's not in the book. The book reads awkward.
Should be.
A little awkward.
What do you mean by awkward?
I mean, it's a very close adaptation, but it doesn't work as well in a book as it does in film. For me, it didn't anyway. It just
needed more Brad Pitt in the page. Are you doing cocaine right now?
Oh, that came through? Shit.
It sounded like a bump, man.
A little toot.
Suddenly it's 1985. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that was it. I think that the book felt a little sporadic. I think the movie streamlined it a little bit better and made it and made it a little more cohesive.
Are you actually supposed to be talking about it?
I'm not in it. All right. I was a casual observer.
Kind of along a similar line, though, is American Psycho. I tried to read the book. The book is I didn't like it at all, but no, the movie is so good.
The book sucks. I don't care. People can say that book is
Yeah,
great.
It's just a litany of 80s brands and shit. It's just ugh.
It's all it is. It's like reading a book that's all about Crockett and Tubbs and Michael J. Fox. I mean, it's just all 80s. That's all it feels like. It's just not good. Marcus Shelton says the Andromeda Strain. Good book. Ed Wallach, Blade Runner. Very nice. Carlos Hernandez, Of Mice and Men, the Malkovich and Gary Sinise version. That was actually a good movie, but I prefer the older one, I think. August Grappin says Silence of the Lambs. You like that?
Did he type that?
No, that's just...
Oh, that's just you.
I added that.
How would you type that? FTP, FTP, FTP.
Oh, God. Mark Belcourt, Napoleon Dynamite. Matt, I didn't know that was based on a book.
I didn't either.
Neither.
Yep. Matt Lucy, Shawshank Redemption. Benjamin Abel, Die Hard. That's true. That is based on a book.
Was it loosely.
Very loosely.
Was it a Christmas book?
It probably was.
It wasn't.
It's available in the Christmas section. Nice. Colin Bergwin says Wonder Boys and High Fidelity are the best books to film adaptations he can think of. Mm. Peter Germany, and I'll rattle the rest of it off pretty quick. Peter Germany, 1984 comes to mind. Kate Eastham, the Harry Potters were very good. I agree. They actually did a very good job. I only read the first book or the first two books, one of those, but they seem pretty faithful.
What?
Yeah.
That whole series is so good.
Yeah, well, I'm not a teenage girl, so I kind of got tired of it. Just kidding. Just kidding, America. I know everybody loves the books. Aaron Martinez, hate mails are incoming. Aaron Martinez says, Psycho, good book by Robert Bloch. Great film by Alfred Hitchcock. Loosely based on the true story of real-life monster Ed Gein. I can't stress enough how separate those two things are. And I think people think the book is very close, and it's really not. D.A. Cheney, Gone with the Wind, Coraline. There were a couple of her mentions. Gone with the Wind is a... I can't imagine it's a much shorter book than that fucking movie.
No, if I remember correctly, it is a doorstop.
Yeah. It's like the Bible, right? I mean, it's basically like the Bible with Rhett Butler.
Just as believable, too.
It's like the Bible with the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know,
and
added
the Quran
to it.
All in one.
I mean, the movie's 4 hours, so it's that's a haul already. Man. That's it. Thanks, guys. The topic for next week, we don't know yet. And that's going to be these guys are going to throw it out there. What?
I just looked up Gone with the Wind in the book form. 1,472 pages. Jesus. How many forests
had to die?
Were cut down in their prime.
How many
to
trees
print that fucker?
Had to die for this series.
And you know, that's not like giant print either. That's
no.
No, that's the Kindle version.
There are hardly any pictures either.
What's that?
There's hardly any pictures either, and the words are real small. And...
I know. I don't have time to read that. How long would it take you to listen to that one, Scott? couple days?
Let me pull it up on Audible. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
That would be so funny to hear Mammy saying, what is it? I don't know nothing about birth and no babies, Miss Carla.
Some white lady. Trying to do a voiceover.
It's some man reading it, and all of a sudden, you know, some lady.
I don't know nothing about birth and no babies, said Mammy.
And this is why you don't narrate books.
That's true. That and because I'm hopped up on the queue. Next week, I won't be here.
On the queue?
On the queue.
Hush, hush.
Dayquil. Next week, I won't be here. So it's just these three yahoos. And whatever they come up with, we're going to hold the other listener topics till I come back so that they can do the show however they want to do it. They're going to knock themselves out. I can't wait to see how that turns out. And I'll be listening to it with you guys. So that'll be fun. Are you guys looking forward to that? Or are you really, you're probably not even going to put a format together. You're just going to show up and start talking.
Just getting rid of you?
Yeah.
So nice.
Gone with the Wind, 49 hours and 7 minutes.
The Audible version?
Yes.
Jesus
Christ.
That's a work week and overtime.
Fucking fuck.
I don't even think the Civil War was that long.
No, they ended it in 43 hours. It's well documented.
Yeah, 43 hours.
It is. People got over it pretty quick. Was it like a Tina Fey and the Golden Globes? We're good now. I don't know if you guys watched that, but they had some pretty good jokes. Remember to like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We also have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie and TV fans. There's a link in the show notes. Be sure to go over there. If you review us on iTunes, we will read your review on the show. We don't have any emails this week. But you can stay through the credits for outtakes. Go to TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Tweet us on H_Outsider. And I already did everything else. Email us feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You want to send your feedback or you want to suggest a topic idea, that's where you send it. Feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen to your Stitcher radio app. Give us a thumbs up if you do, or through whatever podcast feed you use. That's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. I want to thank Justin, Brian, and Scott for being here.
Get better, man.
Thanks. We're done now.
Yeah, right?
Can I make a brief mention of something?
Absolutely. Is it a minor magic or broken magic?
No, I'm actually not pimping myself.
Oh, all right. I'm listening.
Last week, Gillian Anderson of X-Files fame was on the Nerdist podcast, and surprisingly enough, they talked a lot of X-Files in that episode. You'd think she'd be tired of it, but they talked about a potential movie or bringing the show back to air, and she said that both she and David Duchovny are both really interested in either of those options, but she said she would love to have the TV show come back on. And so in the podcast, they decided that to let Fox know that people are interested in this, that they should all tweet at Fox TV a hashtag of X-Files 2015, no hyphen between the X and Files. I would highly encourage everyone to do that. Aaron and I are both massive X-Files fans.
I want a movie. I don't want a TV show, though.
I would. You
know,
I would take.
Me and David Duchovny are pretty tight, so
yeah.
You know, I'll hope for
I will take any new X-Files they'll give me in any form, whether it's TV or movie. But of all of you, and Aaron, I'm looking at you with this Hollywood Outsider that we've got going. Just hashtag it. Hashtag X-Files 2015. And let's see if we can't get something going.
All right.
She's ready for it. David's ready for it. Let's do it.
I will do so. Now, Brian was actually live tweeting the Golden Globes and insulted David Duchovny. And David Duchovny favorited it. I think that was fantastic. The dude has a sense of humor, man.
I mean, for the record, it wasn't like a genuine insult. Like
it was the winner of the I Couldn't Give Two Shits Award.
Well, if you saw his face standing there, he looked like he couldn't give two shits. Yeah. I wasn't saying like I don't give two shits that David Duchovny is on the screen. It was more like of his facial expression, like he could. He probably had a list of about 100 different places he would rather be than standing on that stage at the time.
In fact, he was on Twitter. I'm pretty sure. Like,
so if he had a hand with four shits in it, he wouldn't even give you two of them just because?
Nope.
He'd hold on to his shits?
He would.
Damn.
He is a greedy shitholder.
He's stingy with his shits.
Greedy shitholder.
I think that's going to do it for the show.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of that classy outro, don't forget to go to the nmxlive.com and vote for us for the podcast awards. Please, please, please.
And you can vote every day,
for
right?
Classiest show. I think to get the vote, you only have to vote once. You have to look at the rules. They weren't out yet.
So it's when the actual vote.
It's when you actually make the list. Then that's the everyday.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, but please vote for us. We'd really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Remember, guys, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. Are you all ready for next week?
Yeah, we got the format almost done.
No, right? You ain't sent us the format yet.
How much do you want me to do? So I know. Do you want me just to do the movie releases?
When I say the format, I mean the format.
Fucking asshole.
When he sent the email out a week or so, I mean, I volunteered. There was
You
no
both
word
did.
Either way, but
you and Scott both did. So you guys
can
call it the Hollywood Hoedown.
I didn't see that.
Hey, before I let you guys go, I want to tell Justin something. You guys probably don't care.
Is it private?
No, I just...
Okay. Y'all need a moment?
Is it a confession?
No. I wanted to tell
him. Come on, tell us, Kat. What's going on?
I wanted to recommend a book to him that I think he would enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Is it his own book? Because he already knows.
Yeah, there's this book called Haywire.
Have you read Halo Cryptum?
Never heard of it.
And on that note, you guys have a fantastic evening.
Well, that's why I said it, because I figured I was going to start...
Brian's like, you guys just went full nerd. We're done.
No, I listen to most of it. Although I will say that working that in there with the bleep was genius. That was good.
All I told him was I put your comment in there about fuck all that. And he's like, you did not. I'm like, yep, sure did. It's in there. I think he was probably pissed at me for a minute.
Justin, what's the name of that book you said?
Until I heard it, I was.
I kind of have like a Barry White thing going on right now, a little bit.
Is that why?
Oh, yeah.
I would like to read it just the once to them. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to read it myself and then read it again right away.
Oh, is there like raping or swear words or anything going on in that book?
Not that I can think of. Well, there...
Oh, boy. Oh, he backpedaled.
Well, no, I mean, there is a scene.
There's some
where...
banging. Calvin Johnson.
The Calvin Johnson catch that should have been a catch, and it wasn't, but because of the new rule.
I bet you it gets overturned next year.
If Jerry Johnson has anything to say about it.
Jimmy Johnson. Jerry Jones?
Jimmy Johnson. Jerry Jones, yes.
Jimmy Johnson's
fucking all too many J names in it.